So if you find yourself reverting back to that childishness, you need to go back to God and get close to Him again, because you're losing your place where you were with the Spirit. How to go from being a punk to a prince in 22 years. How many of you knew a punk when you were growing up? How many of you were that punk when you were growing up? I love the freedom that we have in here. We'll just confess, okay? We were punks. How many of you didn't think you were a punk? How many of you didn't think you were a punk, but you were a punk? Here's the thing. I have two brothers, one older, one younger, and I have a sister. My sister was the youngest. She was the baby girl. And one of the things that she knew she could do to us at any given time is say these words, "I'm going to tell Dad." Now, I love my sister, but I'm going to tell you some stories that are not very flattering, because when you're young, you don't act like you do when you're an adult. Amen? For most of us. I've still got a lot of that I'm working on. But when we were young, my sister wanted to do this thing. We used to ride trees. Anybody know what that's about? You did it? You just get four or five guys. You climb up to a top of a tree that's real tall, and the more weight you get on it, the more it starts to bend over. And then when you get it, the one that's on the very top gets ready, the four or five other people jump off, and the tree goes. It was our Disney World as children. And me and my brothers and our friends were having a blast, to the point that in our neighborhood, in the little place where we were doing this, more than half of the trees were bent over like this because we had done it too many times. But we found this one tree, and it looked like it was perfect. And my sister came down into the woods to see what we were doing. And she saw us do it. And she says, "I want to do that." And me and my brother says, "No, Beth, you cannot do that. You will get hurt. If you don't let me, I'm going to go tell Dad." We were stuck, because we knew that no matter what we did at that point, we were all going to get beat. So we sent my sister up to the top of a tree. It's funny now, but it was terrifying then. And we told Beth to hang on with everything she's got. Now, what we did not know then is the biology difference between men and women. And women don't have the upper body strength that men do. So we got her up to the top of the tree. We all jumped off. And much to our surprise, we watched my sister go all the way to the bottom of that tree. Her face was scratched up. My dad had bought her a ring not too long ago, and that ring was just twisted into her finger. And she was crying, and we were trying to comfort her, thinking about how many more hours we had to live. And my sister looked at us, and she says, "I'm going to go tell Dad." And my dad had to cut that ring off of her finger. Oh, we were in trouble for months. And we did get beat, so we knew it was going to happen. But Joseph was a tattletale, just like my sister. And there's a saying that the teens use all the time. Snitches get stitches. Because nobody likes a tattletale. Amen? So look at this right here. I want you to see this, because when I was growing up, when we were doing the flannel graph and we had Joseph with the coat of many colors, we thought Joseph was a cool kid. We never really looked at this. Look at what it says here. Joseph, this is the account of Jacob's family line. And it starts off with Joseph. Joseph, a young man of 17. Now, he was 17. He should have known better. Was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wife, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Now, I love my sister, but I'm going to tell you, we did everything in our power to avoid being around her. Because I'm going to tell Dad. And Joseph was no different. He was bringing a bad report. Now, I don't know what he reported, but here's what it says. Now, Israel, in my case, Dad loved Beth more than any of his other sons. That's not true, but I'm giving you context here. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age. He made an ornate robe for him. Now, I want you to understand what that ornate robe is. It is like, well, they say it was probably a sleeveless robe which either royalty or those who were in charge wore. It was not a coat of many colors. When the King James was trying to translate this, they didn't know exactly how to translate it, so they came up with a multicolored robe. And for years, that has been taught to children, and I'm not going to try to change that because the very first time I taught this to adults, there was a lady that came up to me after the class, and she put her finger in my face, and she says, I have been teaching children that it was a coat of many colors for 57 years, and you are not going to change that now. I do not ever want to hear you say that again. And here I am saying it again. My point being is this, is we don't have everything all the time, but we're still learning. And I would like for us to not change the children part of that, but as adults, we need to know it was not a rainbow coat, okay? So, it says, now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age. He made an ornate robe for him. And when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. When I was studying this a few weeks ago, I was thinking to myself, I have two sons, and I was thinking to myself, I wonder how they felt that if I loved one kid more than the other. So I called Tyler up. And I said, Tyler, I'm studying Joseph, and, you know, I've tried my best to be a good father, but I got a question for you. You don't have to answer it right now if you don't want to, but if you want to answer it now, that's fine too, but you can call me back later and we can talk about it later. And he says, what is it, Dad? And he said, you are a great father. And I said, well, I want to know this. Did I show favoritism? Do you think I liked one of you boys more than the other? Now, I had this running joke when they were little. Matt was older, so he'd get to do things, and there's sometimes Tyler got to do things, and one of them would look at me and say, well, how come he gets to do this and I don't? And I would always say, I like him better, try harder. They got over that as they got older. But I asked him, I said, do you feel like I showed favoritism? He said, Dad, you did. And I said, really? He says, you loved us both. We both know that, but you and I are so much alike. I know you liked me better. So I thought, okay, let me call Matt and see what he says. And I said, Matt, I said, I'm studying Joseph. I've got a question for you. Just tell me the truth. You're not going to hurt my feelings anyway at all. I said, but did I show favoritism? Do you feel like I favored one of you over the other? And he says, yes, Dad, you did. He says, you and Tyler are so much alike that me and you got along so much better, and you liked me better. That was a tough question to ask, but I wanted to ask it. Because in this story, while Joseph is a part of it, his dad was too. And we need to be careful about showing favoritism. Joseph, now look, it says here in verse 4, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. That's pretty significant. And then it says, Joseph had a dream. And when he told his brother, they hated him all the more. Now, this should have given you a clue that when somebody hates you, don't tell them dreams you have like this. He said to them, listen to this dream I had. And I can almost see him shaking his head. Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose up and stood upright. And while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it. Na, 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 na. 17 years old and had no wisdom about dealing with people. His brother said to him, do you intend to reign over us? Now remember the robe. It was an ornate robe, probably something royalty would wear. And he says this dream to him, and his brother said, listen. Or he said, do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us? And they hated him all the more because of his dream. And underline these words, what he had said. Sometimes you need to keep your dreams to yourself. Joseph couldn't do that because God gave him another dream. You know, if you do the same thing over again, expecting different results, that is called what? Insanity. Joseph is doing the same thing over, expecting different results. He had another dream, and he's told his brothers. Listen, I had another dream, and this time the sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me. And when he told his father as well as his father rebuked him and said, what is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you? His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Now the backstory to all of this comes from Genesis chapter 25 through 35. We don't have time to get into that, but if you're unfamiliar with the story of Joseph, I would suggest that you go back and read those verses because you will see a lot of what's going on with Joseph or Israel before he became Israel. And that kind of helps you with the backstory on that. But I want you to remember these things. You can be right and not be righteous. You can be right and not be righteous. You see, when you emphasize being right over relationships, you do damage to relationships. And I have seen it over and over again where people's relationships are right. You are not being wise when you are trying to be right instead of righteous. And I believe there is a big difference between that, because when you looked at the Pharisees and what they were doing, they were trying real hard to be right. But one of the things they weren't doing was being righteous, and that's what Jesus pointed out to them. The second thing I want you to remember is relational maturity is a byproduct of spiritual maturity. Relational maturity is a byproduct of spiritual maturity. And I'm going to tell you something about relational maturity. And you need to know this. You will go back and forth in your relational maturity. I've been really trying hard to be submissive in every area of my life where I need to be submissive. And it's probably the most difficult thing I've done here as of late, especially when I'm driving and somebody pulls out in front of me or somebody does something that's just stupid. I had a guy pull out in front of me tonight. And when he pulled out in front of me, he was determined not to go. Anybody else ever have that happen? Does it irk anybody else? No, it doesn't. John up here is perfect in everything except for when he talks. James says something about that. But the thing of it is, you've got to understand that relational maturity gives you the wisdom to say the right thing at the right time. But you're going to go back and forth, because there are times when I'm very mature about somebody pulling out in front of me and driving real slow, and I think to myself, well, this is okay, you know, I'm not in a hurry or anything like that. But I revert back to being a child again from time to time. And I think to myself, what kind of bonehead would drive like that? Right? Anybody else revert back to childish behavior while you're in the car? And we do it with relationships too. We do it with people at the church. Somebody comes along and says something and does something that we don't like, and we revert to being selfish and self-centered. Or even worse, we slander them with gossip. Or we make up stories in our head as to where that person is and why they're doing what they're doing. We need to understand that relational maturity is a byproduct of spiritual maturity. And here's what I want you to know. When you are in step with the Spirit, you're not going to act like that, because the fruit of the Spirit doesn't act like that. And so if you find yourself reverting back to that childishness, you need to go back to God and get close to Him again, because you're losing your place where you were with the Spirit. The next thing I've got on your notes here, wisdom is not your learning style, but your lifestyle. Wisdom is not your learning style, but your lifestyle. We used to think that because somebody knew the Bible really well, they were wise. We used to think that the more you know, the wiser you are, but that is not the case. I have known a lot of people that have known a lot of Bible that have made some really stupid decisions. Wisdom is your lifestyle. It doesn't matter how much you know. It matters the way you live. And the last thing I've got here is the lack of wisdom causes mistrust. The lack of wisdom will cause mistrust. Now, there is a difference between worldly wisdom and spiritual wisdom, or heavenly wisdom, if you want to put it that way. Worldly wisdom and heavenly. There's a big difference, because what the world sees as wise is not necessarily what God sees as wise. As a matter of fact, worldly wisdom would have told the apostles, give up on what you're doing because it's too hard. Worldly wisdom is about me and what I want. Heavenly wisdom is about God and what He wants. And when it comes to relationships, when people mistrust you because you're trying to be right and not righteous, you have broken a barrier of relationships. I taught this to the teens so much that they can tell you that. There's three questions in every relationship. And the first question that every relationship you have ask is, do you like me / love me? And we've got like and love in there because some people don't like to say I love people. I tell people I love them all the time. As a matter of fact, I forget sometimes that they're not church members, and like a waitress or something like that, and I'll give her a hug, and I say, love you, and I'll leave, and I'll think, oh, they must think I'm a creepy old man. Monty, what'd you say? And relational wisdom would not say things under their breath so the teacher can hear them. But here's the thing. Everybody wants to know, do you like me? Do you love me? They're not concerned about all the things we're concerned about. We try to get people to like us. That's worldly wisdom. Heavenly wisdom is to love others. And when we have that first question answered, the next question they're going to ask is, can I trust you? And when they know they can trust you, that's when they're going to ask the third question, which is, can you help me? And it's when they ask, can you help me, that you have a strong relationship. The problem in the church with a lot of us is we're still trying to get that question answered for ourselves so that we can't help other people. And we need to have a spiritually mature group of people who can answer that question for others. Because if people know they're loved and that they can trust us as a church, we will not have enough room in this building. But we have to grow as a church in our spiritual maturity. I'm not going to have time to get to all my lesson tonight, so I'm going to ask if there's any questions. We got 5 minutes. Questions about what we covered so far? Comments? Yes. I'm going to continue this class next week. When I wrote my notes and got everything ready, one of the things that I didn't realize is I was going to be a grandfather, and I had to show pictures because that's what grandparents do. So I wanted to put that in there because I wanted to encourage you that this is what this church has done. This is what this church has done. When Bobby and Inez came in here, well, when Inez came in first, people were very kind to her and her daughter, and they loved on them, and they became a part of it. And Inez was growing, and she was learning about how to deal with her husband. And you know, it's just amazing. I'll never forget when we had a lady came, and she was enjoying being here. It was for a tent service. She came for a tent service, and she came, and she thought it was great. And she says, I need to talk to you. And I said, sure. We set up an appointment. She came to the office, and she said, I need help fixing my husband. And I said, we can't fix your husband. What? I said, we can't fix your husband. I said, but what we can do is we can make you the best wife ever. And we started working on her walk with God and her being spiritually minded and her doing things that were righteous, not just right. And her husband came to faith over that. And he said he came to faith because he came into this church and he met people that were his age that weren't creepy. That they were real human beings trying to do what is right. And when we love people and they can trust us, they're going to come to us and ask us, can you help me? And you know that you have a convert when they know that you love them and they can trust you and they're asking you questions. Any other comments? Criticisms? Nothing? When is my sister going to come visit? I don't know. I've invited her several times, but I generally see her up at my mom and dad's place when I go up there. So that's generally when we all get together there. Yes, Jill's got her hand up. Hold on just a minute. Let me get you a mic because I know what you're going to say has got to be good.
No, well, that's not true. I was just going to comment. I was joking with my son because you're of your statement, you can be right and not be righteous. And one of our favorite things that we would say to our kids at home is you can be right and still be wrong.
Amen.
You can be right with the facts and wrong with the relationship that you have just destroyed. And so relationships are always more important than things.
Amen.
And so that was our comment.
You need to give your mom a hug.
Oh, yeah.
She taught you right. Oh, hold on just a minute. She's not finished.
He was not a punk.
He was not what?
He was not a punk.
He was not a punk.
You were not a punk?
No.
I knew you back then.
No.
You were a little bit of a punk. Okay? No, I'm just kidding. Yes, Anita.
I'm sure you're probably going to get to this in the study, but we need to always remember that God can use anything for good. That this was kind of the impetus to them selling him into slavery, and that they meant it for harm, but God meant it for good, because there was a bigger plan, and these things had to be foretold.
Yeah, that's the very end of this story, is what Joseph said. So you're way ahead of me right now. But that's okay, Anita. I appreciate the point. Yeah.
This is such incredible wounding. He was raised by a father that picked a favorite. In Jacob and Esau, there's this battle. And mama's boy, and mama's going to help the boy win. And then he turned around and replicated the very thing he hated. And that's so much what we do when we come out of while we're still living in a state of wounding. You either come out of that and you either replicate it or you repudiate it. And he replicated it. And oh my, just the ripple effect of all the relational damage. If he could have got healing, it could have been a different story. So,
amen. Amen. That's something very important to know. If you're wounded, if you get healing, you can help. But if you never get that healing, you can't help others. Yes.
Isn't it amazing what God can do even when his people kind of take a wrong turn?
Yeah.
And God will say, okay, we're going to continue to do what I want to do. I'm just going to have to kind of massage it this way or that way. But God can take in even the mistakes of his people and find a way. Because God's will shall be done.
Amen. Let me say this to you, getting off of what Monty says, and we got time for one more. Chris over here needs one more. But the only person that can thwart God's will for your life is you. That's what this story tells us. The only person that can thwart God's will for your life is you. Yes, Chris.
You know, I think the art of spiritual maturity and relational maturity comes with the concept of, you know, some people lean so far to one side that even when you're wrong, they'll tell you you're okay, you know, versus the other extreme when you tell them they're wrong because they are wrong in a harsh way and ruin the relationship. And you know, I had a good friend from Long Island that's a long-term business partner of mine. And he said, you know, I don't like Southern people because they'll lie to you. They'll tell you they like you. They tell you everything's okay. And then behind their back, they tell everybody else what you're doing wrong. He said, us, you know, New Yorkers are honest with each other. If something's not going right, we tell them. And yet,
but they do it in a very harsh way.
They do it in a harsh way. So, you know, that real maturity comes with being able to have a relationship that's so good that you can, you know, be right and righteous at the same time, because you can do it in a gentle way, in a loving way, and you already have that relationship.
Amen and amen. We're out of time. I'm going to let Bob say what he needs to say real quick, because he will forget if we don't let him. So hurry up and get over there, Nathan. I appreciate you running back and forth. Let's give Nathan a hand for his mic work tonight. And Bob, you're going to close us out. Say something wise.
So we've heard about your driving on many occasions.
And some people have experienced it firsthand.
So let's use the example. You invited a friend for February 11th.
I've already invited some.
Okay. That friend is the one that pulled out in front of you.
And?
Now, how are you going to react?
I can't believe Linda was so stupid in the way she drove. No, you're right. And here's one.
I rest my case.
Here's one even better. What if it was my friend's child? Because one of the things that I have started doing is I've started thinking about that everybody I come in contact with is God's son or God's daughter, and some of them don't know it yet, and it's my job to treat them like God's children regardless. With that, amen. Thank you for watching us online. Thank you to the sound booth. Thank you for being here.